to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Go. It's not that simple without the microphone, really. Well, welcome back.
Details.
All right, it's Tom Howe. I am Tom Howe. He's Mr. Brendan Cornett. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Why did I think that I had another, like, 2 seconds on that intro? I'm getting weird over here. S&P futures, they're down a whole 2 points, Dow down 37. And we've got the NASDAQ actually up 5, so we're going to mix bag this morning. Oil up 25 cents. 10-year yield, 3.1.
First time in 12 days we have an up in gold.
Yeah, and we have an up in oil.
It stays here.
Well, that would be nice, seeing as I could use a rally in both of those, since I'm loaded to the max and those things. But anyway, Frank, how are you?
Very good.
I'm doing all right, except I spent, as I sent everybody texts and emails yesterday, two things we want to talk about this morning a little bit, in addition to the market and wherever else comes up, a little bit about World War One, and then Kevin and I were talking last night, and he might call in for a couple minutes. But the Florida State game with Lou Holtz and Bobby Bowden, how many people from both sides went to the NFL, Frank? It was almost as many as the MSU Notre Dame game in 1966, like 22 or something. As McDougal was.
Oh, yeah, but you talk to people like my dad who graduated in 49 from Notre Dame, and darn near his whole class went to Notre Dame or went to the pros.
Well, but because the guys in college were better than the guys in the pros in those days. Because they were 22, 25 years old. Most of them had got another job first.
I mean, at that time, a lot of them were old enough because they had served in World War II and came back.
Yeah. Well, who was the guy that, Leanne Hart? He was a Heisman Trophy winner at Notre Dame. I don't know if he went to the war, Brendan, but when he graduated, they said he was the best football player in the country, not just college, pro too.
I would guess he went to the war. My dad went to Notre Dame when he was 16 because he wanted to get a semester in before he was drafted. And the average age of his freshman class was 22.
Yeah, I mean, those guys were. I mean, Frank Leahy was he, a lieutenant or a captain or something, or what the hell he was? He was over there recruiting ball players. I don't think he did much for a war. I mean,
he coached the Great Lakes Naval Team.
Yeah. And then
Well, you got to have your priorities.
Absolutely. And you have... Didn't he have two Heisman Trophy winners in the same team? One from before and one from after? I think he did. I mean, how many people have had that before? You got a pretty good squad if you got two Heisman Trophy winners on there. But I remember one of the guys I've mentioned this story before. My buddy's from Pullman. How's that for Pullman, right? Does a buddy count, maybe, as a reference?
That's still a reference.
All right.
Well, we'll go to the judges, but I think we're going to confirm that it is indeed a reference.
The guy's name was Bob Massa, and he played for the Air Force. And Bob was a terrific ball player. I mean, he played softball for us, and he turned a double play in 16-inch when it was 55-foot bases, Brendan. And I mean, talk about a guy hanging in there. I mean, you couldn't move him with a tarp. So they're playing on he used to play 140 ball games a year as an all-star third baseman for the Air Force. Hmm. They would fly him by himself in a C-130. What prop job, not the big, just to go to a game for an all-star game if they're playing somebody. So they're playing this team down in Florida. They had the best flag football team, bar none. And all of a sudden, they're playing, and then they start to lose this team, and there's this guy playing quarterback for the other team. He said he's the fastest guy in the field. He's big, and every time somebody turned around, even if they weren't even open, the ball's like exploding on their chest. Finally, go, all right, who the hell is this guy? It was Roger Staubach. he said he was unbelievable. He said every other starter on the team, their guy would have played. You know, except for Staubach, and he got their ass kicked. He was that good. Played defense, too, I think.
Well, that was the time when everybody went both ways. They were offense and defense.
You know, he started football, basketball, and baseball in the Naval Academy. Not many people know that.
Staubach did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was quite the athlete. Anyway, so, Frank, we were talking a little bit about stuff about World War One, so I was digging through my... So, Brendan, of course... writes back without even being prodded. Brandon is of the new group of people that does not call him World War One or World War Two. What do you call it? The 30 years war with the 15 year intermission?
Yeah, just enough time to grow a new generation of cannon fodder.
How do you the German? How do I say this politically correctly? They must be good at something. Because how do you lose how many million people in 1918 and have enough young men again 20 years later to do it all over again?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some people.
Reproduction.
People are working, doing something.
Well, yeah. But remember that even though they lost that many in World War One, there were a lot of youth that were still way too young for the war by the time World War One ended. So, they were the first people in line of battle in World War Two.
But they're sort of the same age range, 18 to 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they were more the 25 to 27 year old by the time they got to 1939, 1940.
Yeah, well, I've read some stuff on World War One.
And look at what happened in places like France and Poland. There was no opposition. I mean, the Germans just came in and just walked all over them. So, there was not a lot of resistance.
It sort of started with the Franco-Prussian War? According to some people's timelines.
Well, that was, what, 1890-something? Or was that
2005? 1871.
The one kind of leads into another in Europe. I mean, they were all... Plus, half the guys... The weird part was a lot of the different dynasties were all the same people, married in and out.
Well, that was what a lot of the European dynasties did. They married off their daughters to princes and kings in other countries to form these coalitions.
So you think Maddie Weber would have gotten one of these... Think Matty Weber would have gotten these princesses, delivered to his doorstep?
Oh, as an Englishman, Matty would have had his choice of France, Germany, or Spain.
Without a doubt.
Well.
And I would have chosen all three.
Yeah. Kevin, tell us about the Florida State game and Michigan State and how many different people went to. I'm going to say that the Alabama-Ohio State game of a few years ago had to be about as good as these other two games in terms of people going to the pros.
Well, that one was pretty stocked, and it was stocked with a whole lot of not just guys who went in the pros, but guys who were drafted, first day, first 2 days, a lot of first-round picks, a lot of second- and third-round picks. So, it was. Hey, good morning, everybody, by the way.
Morning.
Good morning, Kale.
Good morning.
So, we're saying that we're...
So, the features on Florida State... Probably the most noteworthy would have been Derek Brooks and Derek Alexander on the defense. Charlie Ward, their quarterback, won the Heisman Trophy that year, but he also played varsity basketball. Probably the last guy on a good team that I can remember playing basketball at a high level in college after the football season ended. And Ward wound up being a first-round draft pick of the New York Knicks and went and played in the NBA instead.
He had like a 10-year career, didn't he? He was there a while.
Yeah,
they had...
Let's see. So who else? We had Warwick Dunn on their team, William Floyd. As I'm kind of looking down here, Tamrick Vanover played in the NFL for quite a while. Devin Bush, Sam Cowart. So that was pretty good. On the Notre Dame side, the Bryant Young, who is should be a Hall of Fame defensive lineman when all is said and done.
He's from Homewood Flossmoor, right?
Bryant Young was on the defensive line along with Jim Flanagan, who played for a long time with the Bears, and Oliver Gibson and Brian Hamilton. That entire front four played in the NFL. Let me see, Aaron Taylor and Tim Ruddy on the offensive line. Aaron Taylor was a high-round draft pick who played a very long time, and Ruddy was the starting center for something like 10 years in Miami. Jeff Burris, first-round draft pick and defensive back in Buffalo and Indianapolis, and let's see, Lake Dawson was one of the wide receivers, played for Kansas City. Derek Mays was there. Ray Zellers, who played, was the starting halfback for San Diego, and he lost his life tragically in a plane crash at the height of his career. Mike Miller, defensive back. Derek Mays, I think I mentioned. Pete Bursich played linebacker for the Vikings for a long time. Bobby Taylor, cornerback for Philadelphia for a long time. You know, those teams were stacked.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, those teams had ball players.
Well, the kid from Brian Young you're talking about, he's from Homewood Flossburg, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And, you know, from
did you mention Pete Bursich and Tony Peterson?
I mentioned Bursich. I did not mention Peterson, so that's a good call.
He was there for about 5 years, and then Covington was Colt forever.
Yep. Yeah.
Kevin, are there teams other than Alabama? Well, Kevin and Frank, other than Alabama, well, I'm going to say I don't have to include Ohio State in there. Are there teams now that get that amount of people? I mean, especially when you've got this kind of secondary. As seniors, people can go other places. I mean, it seems a little harder to stockpile that kind of. Well, there's less scholarships per team, so it is harder to stockpile.
I think they were at the 85 limit by then.
Okay. But wasn't there?
A few more for you, Frank. Ronaldo, Wynn, Ken and Tatum, Barry. And some of those guys were just they were reserves who became starters later in their college years.
Well, Aaron Taylor was a little younger because he was on a national championship team.
Aaron Taylor?
No. I think he was. I'm pretty sure he was.
Well, if he was a senior in 93, then he would have been a freshman in 89. And
that he could have been.
Unless he was on the five-year program.
Yeah, which I don't think he was.
Yeah, which I don't think he was. I was probably a guy who could have been on the three-year program.
Yeah, well.
I don't think so. He was born November 14, 72.
Yeah.
He it played was a cool game. I probably could have unloaded my tickets for a whole lot of money, but that's one of those games where you can't replace the memory at all. It was I took my son to the game. He was a freshman in high school at the time, and we still talk about that once in a while. One of the funny stories from that was that. We always used to agree on where we would meet if we got separated in the crowd going out. You know, it's like what gate? You know, gate 8 or something like that. And as soon as the game ended, Patrick just looked at me and said, gate 8. And that took off and went out on the field.
Well, the.
And Holtz almost gave away that game. He went into his classic prevent defense, which always upset me.
The Pavilion.
And others.
True, Frank, but it got close. It also got close because on like a 4th-and-20 play, Florida State was desperate. There were maybe 5 minutes left or something like that, and Ward threw a pass into the end zone, and it was deflected by the Notre Dame defensive back, and it went right into McCorvey's hands for a touchdown. So that drew them within to 7 points. And that had them, and you're right, then Holtz went conservative, they got the ball back, and they were once again throwing on the last play of the game into the end zone. But it got batted down. It should have been.
Much like, and he did it the next weekend.
Point game if that deflection had hit the ground instead of the Florida State receiver.
Well,
what happened
to Paulus before the game that, he had broken his collarbone early and he was supposed to play in that game and then he didn't? In warm-ups, he got hurt again?
I wasn't going to play in that game. By then, McDougal was having a terrific season.
Well, they interviewed McDougal Saturday. That's what brought this all up. They interviewed McDougal, and he goes, I didn't think I was going to play. They were going to bring Paulus back. And then after warm-up, they said, you're playing. He goes, I didn't think I was going to play. And then he ended up playing. But it's from his mouth. It's interesting.
He only threw 7 touchdown passes that year, but only 5 interceptions as well. He was I'm looking at the stats page right now. He was a 62% passer, but he was also if I look at the rushing statistics, McDougal added on another 221 there. The guy was a really efficient quarterback, a really good college quarterback.
He was bemoaning Friday and Saturday night. He goes, "Boy, I still love to play." The guy said, "Look, you look like you can still play." And he goes. He goes, maybe 3 or 4 downs, but then I'd have to come out. I know that
come
feeling.
Come out gasping for air or come out saying, please don't hit me again.
Pretty much that. The
3 or 4 downs getting hit that time, and he'd be done.
All right, Kevin, anything crazy on the weekend and in college ball? Not really. The craziest thing was
the top 10 teams all won. Yeah. There were a couple of games that were fairly close, but the top 10 teams all won. So I don't expect any shuffling of the deck.
Who did Alabama play, Slippery Rack?
They played a real team, didn't they?
Alabama has the Citadel this week.
Oh, this week. This week.
Yes, they've already played Arkansas State and Louisiana Lafayette. This penultimate game, Patsy game, has become an SEC trademark. There's, I think you have Florida playing Idaho. Somebody's playing Liberty. South Carolina's got a silliness game. You know, and what's crazy about it is, you know, you take a team like South Carolina, they've already played Coastal Carolina, and you say, well, they only get one game against the lower division team. Yeah, and then they get one game against a team that just moved up from the lower division and is now playing in the Sun Belt Conference.
Now, what do they pay Liberty for this game, you think?
Oh, they probably pay him, well, it depends, but the paydays run anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. There might be even a few that make a little bit more.
Wow. All right, Kevin, take care of yourself. We'll talk to you Wednesday.
All right, talk to you Wednesday.
Yep. So, hey,
Kevin.
We'll do a Paul Harvey, page two, back to, so, how can I shift this that fast back to World War One football? World War One.
Football is a war game.
Football is a war game. I read a bunch.
And
we
had different conferences.
Yes, you did. One of the most interesting. I've read a bunch of stuff on it. I'm not near as up on that as I am on World War Two, but the book by George Marshall, his time over there in World War One was. So these people were absolute morons. He goes, he didn't say that, but I mean, I'm reading between the lines. The British had a day where they lost 60,000 people, 60,000 casualties in one day.
Yeah.
And they weren't all dead, but, I mean, he just said it was just nothing but mud. And he goes, they would pour lime in all the trenches just to keep the smell down. And then, with the smell from all the people didn't make it back and got killed between the trenches and the bodies are decaying on the field and the amount of rats were out there eating them. He goes, it was absolutely incredible.
Yes.
Then people he was saying they brought in all these Germans that were, they just captured on this one offensive, and everybody's puking green because they'd all been gassed. And the amount, they're using gas, I mean, oh God,
World War One was very interesting from the perspective that all of the major players continued to wage war as they did in the 1800s. Except with more lethal weapons.
Yes.
They had started bringing in tanks, they had machine guns. So, you know, if you think about the wars, even like the Revolutionary War, where the Redcoats would march in formation and line up with the first row kneeling, the second row musketeers behind them standing, and shooting. So one whole row would volley, would shoot, and then they'd stand back, the other ones would come kneel down and shoot while the first guys were reloading. That doesn't work when you're facing machine gun fire. You know, that may work when you've got muskets and you've got guys hiding behind rocks with muskets, but when you're advancing 1,000 troops into machine gun fire, that kind of approach doesn't work. And then they just got hunkered down in their trench warfare. They kept digging trenches deeper and deeper because of artillery and machine guns, and then later tanks when they came in.
Well, I was watching a Stand History Channel about the use of gas and how there was evidently somewhere along, I don't know who invented the gas, but the deal was you couldn't use gas in an artillery shell. Those were the head of rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was the rule.
Right.
So they decided, okay. So the Germans decided they were going to, in the middle of the night, they had some dark night, and they had these idiots crawling forward with hoses into near the next guy's trenches, and they pumped the chlorine gas through the hoses the next day. And of course, the idiots jumped into the bottom of the trenches, but chlorine gas is heavier than air. Mm-hmm. So that's right where the gas goes. That's where you don't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So then the first time the British tried it, the wind turned the other way and blew it back on their own troops. But it was a comedy of errors, except it was so serious.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the war, the gas thing that people would wear, you wore this big thing on your side. It looked like a big, I'll go back to my high school day, it looked like a big Benny bag.
I have not heard that term in a long time.
It was slung over your shoulder with a strap, but instead of being a bag like, you know, you'd wear, you know, a gym bag, for lack of a better term, it went lower, it was hung around your hip, and it was maybe 2.5 feet long, and then it was all kinds of charcoal and all kinds of stuff to filter all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually breathed through the bag, whatever was in there could knock off most of the things they were winging at you. So everybody had to be outfitted with these things, but I mean, imagine in some muddy trench, running with rats all running over the place, and they're gassing you. You can think of a better, worse day. I mean, I can't even. And the numbers of people that are dying, and they went nowhere. I mean, they were in the
almost 10 million people died.
Yeah.
In World War, military people died in World War One. They figured that the civilian casualties were about 8.
Yeah, and then World War II was obviously the other way. You see how many? Well, the Germans, when they invaded Russia, World War II, they had 3 million men. That's like a boatload of people. Not to mention, well, I mean, I don't know if that included if that was just fighters, that was logistics too. But how many people did the Russians lose? 40 million in a war? I mean, it was civilians and otherwise.
It was a lot.
I mean, you see this stuff happen, but the big fight was when the 1st Division finally went over there. The French generals and the British generals just wanted more fodder. You know, okay, here's another 5,000 guys we can throw in the trenches and run against machine guns. And Pershing was adamant that we're going to fight as Americans. We're not just giving you guys our people to butcher them like you have your own.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't really go in any action for almost a year. But the weird part is George Marshall was saying, yeah, we had a great day, but guess what? 7 of the 9 lieutenants that were all my friends are all dead. How's that a great day? But he absolutely hated war. That's mm-hmm. why he was a great general.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole thing was, if you have to do it, you know, you want your people to be the best led, the best equipped. He goes, the idea that we sent people in the trench warfare without developing tanks first or saying, what do we need? And he said it was insanity. Because you know all you do is lose people. And for what?
And we had 3 years to prepare for it before we entered the war, because we didn't enter until, 17?
Except we really didn't prepare for it, in his point. That's what he remembers. I mean, when you talk about the man's history, he was a cavalry guy, because he was older. He was a cavalry. I think he went to VMI, I believe. He didn't go to West Point. But he was a cavalry guy in one of these Mexican border war things. They sent him out with, like, how many hundred people on horseback, like something like a John Wayne movie. He said they were out there 30 days. They never came within a whiff of who the guy they were chasing. He said every guy lost 25 pounds. He goes, you know, they had no intelligence, no anything. He goes, I'm never again leading people anywhere if I don't know where the guy is. And evidently the Spanish-American War, all the troops went over there a day before all the food showed up on the dock. Now he goes, the screw-ups in logistics and in wartime are just dramatic. And if you don't have the person there with the gun, with the shells, with the food, with toilet paper, with everything else, you just screw everybody up. And he was bound and determined that if our guys were going to go anywhere, that they were going to be some of the stuff you'd read about how many bullets an American soldier was given in one of these fights on these islands, and how many the Japanese had. These guys might have like 6 bullets. Our guys had like 50. You know, and even how much toilet paper you had per day. You know, they had like 3 sheets. Our guys had like 100. You know, you were liable to stay healthy. You were liable to come home, and it was just different. I mean, anyway, so Frank, what do you think of Mark?
Well, he was chief of staff.
Yeah.
And, you know, he ran the operations.
Yeah, well, that's the
World War II for the U.S. military.
That was the big thing. He never got back in line action. And when he wanted to command the invasion of Normandy. And Roosevelt said, no, you're too valuable here. And they, you know, there's the difference. How would the world have been different? He would have been president instead of Eisenhower. Right? I mean, Grant was president.
Yeah.
Grant's logistics officer wasn't president.
Mm-hmm.
Even though George Marshall was, you know, he was the general of the army and in charge of everybody. He didn't lead the charge. So anyway, SP Future's still down too. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature Protect and Index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Brendan Cornan, Mr. Frank Fahey, Mr. Matt Weber. Doing a little history today, doing a little sports history today, doing a lot of stuff today. S&P futures now down 1, now futures down 42, and NASDAQ futures up 4. Oil is a big mover this morning, up 37 cents, 60.56, so it's back up over 60 with a little bit of breathing room. 10-year yield, 3.18. Over in Europe, we've got, actually the DAX down 97 points, 0.8%, so that's down a little bit. What's the oil down 13.2%, CAC around down 14.3%. Over in Asia, we've got,
Nikkei up 19, it's 0.1. It's not much. 22,269, so they're still low. Shanghai up 31, it's 1.2. 2630, back up over 2600. It seems to be 2550, 2650 is where we've been violently moving. Hang Seng up 31, 25,633, that's only 0.1%. Big move again in this natural gas. This is wild. 385. I'm going to say that's $1.15 or so higher than it was. Where the hell are we? November? I'm going to say that beginning in December or September, I think it was 375. That's unbelievable. Again, West Texas up 37 cents. Brent up 82 cents. 71 bucks. That spread is now $10.50. RBOB 163. So gas is not going with it, even though it's up a whole penny. Gold is down 60 cents now. Silver down a penny. It was moving up a little bit, but now they're not. Copper up 0.008 cents. So not much moving there either. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes.
I think I'm going to go kick a field goal, hit the pole.
There you go. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Happy Veterans Day. And because of it being Veterans Day, the roadways are looking pretty quiet. A lot of people are off work today, off school today. And the traffic is reflecting that. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Southside Expressway is looking good. Out in the burbs, we have one crash to report. Northern suburbs, Rand Road, US 12 at Old Rand Road. There is an accident causing some backup, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today, another cold, gloomy day, but we're used to that already. Only about four more months of this. Right now it's overcast and 31, going up to a high of 36. So we'll be in the low to mid 30s all day with wind chills in the low 20s. Just how we like it. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 67 today. Right now it's clear and 48. In sports, the first-place Bears earned their first division win since 2016, Chief. They jumped out to a 26-0 lead and held on to beat the Lions after somewhat of a sloppy second half. 34-22 was the final in that one. Mitch Trubisky was nearly perfect. He threw for over 350 yards, three touchdowns. He also rushed for a touchdown, no turnovers. The Bears' kicking game, though, as Chief alluded to, was not so perfect. Cody Parkey missed two field goals and two extra points, all four of which clanking off the upright and bouncing back onto the field of play. But Matt Nagy said that there is no chance that they will be replacing Parkey this week. He has 100% confidence in him.
That means
he
replaces him next week.
And so we'll wait and see on that. But the Bears remain in first place. Vikings were on a bye. Packers won.
Packers played pretty well.
Yeah, Packers played pretty well at home against Miami. No surprise there. The Cardinals lost to the Chiefs 26-14. Sunday Night Football is the Cowboys upsetting the Eagles in Philadelphia 27-20 to keep their slim playoff hopes alive. And one other game of note last night, it was the Coyotes over the Capitals in NHL play 4-1. Chief.
So our Hawks are toast. Our Bulls are toast. Bears are playing well. So we got something
going on. All that's important. This is a Bears town.
We got something going on. So what do you think against Minnesota?
It'll be interesting. It obviously got flexed to the Sunday Night Football game, so it'll be the national TV game. It'll be cold, I'm sure, on the lake at night.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a huge game. I think the Bears will be slight favorites. In fact, that line's probably out. I can probably find it. And I think the Bears will win. Now, in Minnesota, I think they'll lose. And then they have to turn around after a Sunday night game and play a Thursday morning game on Thanksgiving. Now, that'll be tough.
11 o'clock on Thursday morning, right?
In Detroit, right. Yeah. So to ask these guys in 70-plus hours to turn it back on and play on national TV, that's going to be tough. And that could be a game that they lose, even though I think they're a lot better than the Lions.
Well, the Lions are playing it Sunday, too.
Not Sunday night.
Well, okay.
They get an extra, you know,
hour.
An extra what? Yeah, 7-plus hours, which may not make a difference, but maybe it does.
But still,
you know, it's kind of hard to believe that 7 hours would make that much of a difference to professional athletes.
I would think once it's the one day, I think you're pretty much you're better off at home. At least you're better off at home.
Minnesota. Yeah, and the Lions will be at home, too, which helps them.
Yeah.
Well, that helps them, but the Bears will be home Sunday night, so it's not like they've got to travel to get back to their own beds for Monday.
Right, that's true. So, you know, it's a tough stretch. It's probably schedule-wise the toughest stretch of the season to play Sunday night and then Thursday and then come back at it against division teams.
Yeah, now this is unusual because it's a Thursday morning game being Thanksgiving, but this is one of the problems that the NFL is facing with the players' union, with Thursday night games generally, that it's a short turnaround if you've got, I mean, they were saying it before with Monday night coming back to Sunday the next week, but now when you've got a Sunday night game or a Sunday game and then coming back on Thursday for a Thursday night game, that's tough for those guys.
Well, I've done a Thanksgiving game.
Forever. Like 45 years, yeah.
I'm one of you sports mavens. Why are they so vehemently opposed to not having the two teams coming off the bye weeks playing on the Thursday night?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess you don't.
Well, they always have what? Detroit and Dallas playing that game, right?
Well, now somebody plays. Now somebody else plays every night. There's three games now. There's a floating one that plays Thursday night. There's three games, right, Manny?
I think there might be. Yeah.
I mean, used to be Dallas and then the Cowboys. I mean, Detroit and the Cowboys.
Yeah, Detroit forever.
Yeah,
Detroit
11 o'clock and then the Cowboys in the afternoon.
And it used to be Detroit versus Dallas, and then they split them so that Dallas and Detroit hosted the Thanksgiving games.
Yeah, so for the last couple of years, they've had the two Thanksgiving games, including Detroit and Dallas, like always, but they've continued the regular Thursday night game on top of that.
Okay.
So it's three games. So this year, it's Bears-Lions at 11:30, then it's Redskins Cowboys at 3:30.
That'd be a good one.
And then the night game is Saints and Falcons at 7:20.
Another good one.
So you know it's good games, but these guys are all on very short rest, obviously.
Yeah, and this late in the season, the injury risk goes up because of the cumulative nature of how far they are into the season. They really take more time to recover from their games.
But some of the teams are just. It's not who you play, is when you play them. I mean, last night, all they did were talk about how many people were out in the Eagles secondary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Hawk.
Yeah.
How many times has Hawk Harrelson said that?
Well, it's, yeah. But I think it's especially true in football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of unusual that the Bears are playing Detroit. Usually they try and spread out the division games. Maybe say that doesn't happen, but the Bears are playing Detroit twice in 11 days.
Right.
Well, up until yesterday, the Bears had only played one divisional game. It was the first game of the year against the Packers. All the other five games are still yet to come, except for Detroit yesterday.
Yeah, it's a little strange. So what do you think? The Packers are back in striking distance of at least the wild card. And these ties are going to be part of the wild card, isn't it? It's the first time we've seen that in a few years.
Yeah, the ties absolutely play in. Obviously, they're not worth as much as a win. So that has the Bears still ahead of the Vikings, even though they both have three losses. But they're certainly better than a loss. So you have the Bears at 6-3, and then the Vikings 5-3-1, and Packers 4-4-1, and the Lions are pretty much out of it now at 3-6.
What the Lions, and Frank, we talked about this last week a little bit. Does anybody know what's going on in their front office like ever? they were talking yesterday about what's his name, Collinsworth or whatever the hell was saying about the Lions getting rid of. What's his name?
Golden Tate.
And how, you know, and then of course, I hate to say anything bad, but I will anyway. Listen to the Bears, the three guys that are before and the radio. So I'm listening to those guys coming into town. One of them is, I don't know, is it Schwanzy or somebody? Some guy.
Schwanzy, Hilgenberg.
Well, somebody sounds like, well, you gotta understand, this is a business. First of all, the fans are not supposed to treat it as a business. They're supposed to be idiots and just go to the game no matter who's there. The players are supposed to treat it as a sport, right? The owner. But the thing of it is, not that they get rid of Golden Tate for a draft pick, but evidently 2 weeks before, they had just acquired a guy that everybody said, well, the only reason why they're acquiring him is they're all in for this year. And 2 weeks later, they go the other direction. So they were saying it wasn't that they got rid of Golden Tate that was so bizarre. It was that they just acquired a guy that you would never have acquired if you didn't think you were in it. And then within like, you know, 14 days, they go totally the opposite direction, which is a little odd. But, you know, that's the Lions. I guess that's why they never win. When's the last time they won? Was it like the 50s?
Well, they were decent a couple of years ago. They had a couple of years where they were okay.
They've never won a Super Bowl, though.
No, they've never won a Super Bowl. Have they even gone to the Super Bowl?
Have they ever played in it?
I don't think they've ever played in it.
I don't think they have either.
No. Now, did they win an NFL championship back in the way back, you know, 40s and 50s? Maybe. I don't know. I think they did.
I think they did in the late 50s. Alex Karras was young or something.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Alex Karras played on a championship team back in the late 50s, early 60s.
Back in that horrible stadium they played in, they always played. Thanksgiving game was always snowed.
Yeah.
was a...
That was before Eric Karras started punching horses.
Yeah, it was... Well, he was a hell of a ball. He was from Iowa.
He was.
They've, the Lions have won four NFL championships, the most recent in 1957.
Okay, we were in a year. I would have said 58.
You guys were pretty much dead on.
All right, Frank, what's going on with the market? What are we going to do this week? Anything?
The consensus seems to be that we're going down, and that's based on, I saw a questionnaire or a poll on where do you expect the VIX to be this coming Friday, and about 70% of them expected it to be higher, about 40% expected it to be above 20, and right now the VIX is trading at 17.7, so...
The VIX is not...
Take it with a grain of salt. That's the volatility of the market, and the higher it is, the lower the market is.
We've gotten a switch from... those who have listened to the show, I don't know if people listen a hell of a lot real closely to what I talk about with our program, but our Protected Index program, which we did for 12 years religiously, and probably was, I'm going to say probably, was the best program for retail people ever. Well, of course, since they... 2008, 2009, all we've done is gone creep straight up until the last year or two. And we didn't put anybody in it, Frank or Brennan, for really a long time because I'm only going to put people in something if I think it's going to succeed. And there was an odd thing where the further out you went, the higher your volatility went, implied volatility. So the VIX is one number, but if you look at every month has its own implied volatility. So you have to be very careful. If you buy the month where the volatility is 22 and the VIX is 17, you didn't pay 17, you paid 22. So you got to be real careful when you look at the VIX versus, it's an indicator, but it's a one number indicator in a world where everybody wants one number. You know, and in fact.
Well, the problem is it's a cash number and you can't trade that cash number.
Right.
You can't trade the 17.71. The options trade against a future, and every month has a different VIX future. It's something that the retail trader shouldn't be trading and should count on somebody like you to use the VIX for what it's meant to do, which is a hedge.
Well, but it also, I mean, if somebody buys a, say the S&P is, pick a number, 270. Actually, if you buy the 262 puts 2 weeks from now, you might pay 24, depending on what the mm-hmm. near-term vol is. So you can't pay 24 and then say, well, the VIX is 17. I paid 17. No, you didn't. You paid 24. Anyway, what I was saying is for a long period of time, like 8 or 9 years, the volatility going out was higher than the short term, which, Frank, in the 25 years before the last 10 that you and I have been doing this, that never happened. The volatility, the implied volatility was usually higher nearer term than further out. But now all of a sudden it's swinging back the other way. So in the last 2 weeks, all of a sudden it's like people sensed it. I got like five calls. Hey, by the way, you guys still doing that Protected Index program? Yeah. So I get interviews with guys all week, to talk about putting some stuff in there. I said, right now, I don't know but if you're going to be in the market, you need to be protected. And I can get you, the volatility is good. We got a good chance of making the money back on the call sales. Doesn't mean you will, but this is the program to be in right now if you're going to be in the market. Because I think the next 10 years are going to be more like 1998 to 2008 than the last 10. But even so, you do it for a while, and all of a sudden we start doing the same thing again. Volatility goes way down, market just goes up every day. You can always just get out. It takes two trades to get you out. So, I mean, I think right now I have no problem putting people in it right now, Frank, because even if it goes down, we'll be okay. We're like a 30 delta. You know, so, if the market goes
down,
so you're in, but you're not. You know, you'll be fine if it goes down, type of thing. You won't be happy. I mean, you'd rather you waited till that day, but it's better than a sharp stick in the eye than the other. But I don't know what this oil thing is weird. I'm so ticked off that the administration didn't tell me that the eight countries that got to buy Iranian oil, even though they were gonna drop them down to a spoonful, right? Which was all BS.
Right.
So, I got hit a little bit on this XLE. I never would have. I'd have been out if I'd have known that. I want to get these memos. Just saying. But other than that, what do you think? I mean, normally, if we have a little sell-off in October like we did, we would usually, The calendar statistics would tell you that more often than not, we would rally into the end of the year. I don't know if I buy any of these calendar statistics anymore, Frank. I mean, the ones that Dr. J and I used to do by the, you know, big department stores and Labor Day and sell them before Thanksgiving, we haven't done that in 5 years. I mean, is there any real calendar thing now that you would still do?
It looks like natural gas is.
Well, that's, yeah. How wild is that? Now, do you
and I haven't looked at heating oil. Gosh, that used to be a big deal.
Well, if it is, that spread between heating oil and gas has got to be monstrous because gasoline goes down every day.
Right. And I seem to remember 10 years ago or 5 years ago, we had so much natural gas that they were just burning it off.
Well, what do you think happened this time? The build wasn't as what, for those of you, I'm not an expert on this, but there's two times of the year in natural gas. There's a build and there's a drawdown. So they have all these underground caverns all over the place where they store natural gas. So during the summer or the spring and summer when you're still, you know, drilling and getting natural gas, you fill up all these caverns, and it's called a build-up stage. And there's all these numbers of how much natural gas is in storage and storage and storage, and then you get it up to a certain number, and you compare the storage number. Well, all of a sudden, three or four guys come out, starting with the Farmer's Almanac, saying, okay, what's the winter going to be like? And if all of a sudden somebody says, oh, no, the winter's going to be a lot colder than people thought, and then you get a little cold snap early like we have, and a storage number, for some reason, is not like record, then those three things come together. Now you've got natural gas up, what, 30%? Right? 25-30%?
Right.
But if that's not a number, I mean, we used to have a couple of retail people that traded that, but they weren't exactly, Brendan, they weren't real retail people, shall we say? Because, what's that contract, Frank? It's like, if you could lose $20,000 in a day in a one line in there. Or a two line. I mean, it's a huge contract. I mean, I think an oil contract is a whole train car full of oil, right? So it's whatever the gas equivalent is of that. But I don't know, it's how many cubic, whatever it is, meters. But, I don't know. David will probably know. When David comes in, he might know. But, I mean, you know, not regular people trade that is what I'm saying. I mean, the margins are huge.
Yeah. Well, there's a question if regular people really ever trade.
Well, it's, yes. Well, I mean, it's the regular person from ComEd is one who hedges with natural gas, correct?
Right, right.
And have you ever traded one? Like I said, we used to have some guys. I know we had
never.
I know we had an out trade one time where I don't know what we did. It was a customer error, but I don't know. We ended up splitting or what we did, but I think it was a 5 minute error, Frank, and it was $20,000 in a three lot. I mean, it was a real number, and. It happened in a flash. I mean, and the spreads are wide. I mean, it's definitely a professional. It's like I joke once in a while.
It's all liquid.
Yeah, I joke once in a while about the difference between the West Texas and the Brent. Well, there's a spread you could play, and I actually think there might be a spread product someplace. But by and large, if you are willing to buy West Texas on the CME and sell Brent on the London and have the margin for both. You got some scratch, huh, Frank? I mean, you're not a piker, as they used to say on the trading floor. You're like Brendan. You know, you're Mr. Warbucks. It's the type of thing. You know any attorneys that aren't rich, Frank?
I know a lot of young attorneys who aren't. They can't find jobs.
Well, that's the truth, too.
Well, that was true a couple of years ago. It's changing a little bit now, but that was certainly
true. Well, that's good.
But you know, they're. You know, the law field is not all rich guys. I mean, there's the median income for attorneys, when you think about it, is, you know, 75 to even lower than that. It's offset by a lot of the big firms where partners are making a couple million dollars a year. But in most firms, a lot of solo practitioners aren't making all that big money. It's a certain slice. The 1% of the lawyers are very, very rich people. But most lawyers aren't all that rich.
I'm going to say that it's Brendan, you're being charitable. I mean, I think it's worse than that. I think it's worse than that. To be honest with you,
I think it is. When you think about a lot of solo practitioners in parts of the country, even in the metropolitan area, they're not making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
I think you end up helping an awful lot of people in trouble, especially if you're a, if you have a one or two or three person shop. And I think the courts basically jack you around.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going up against somebody bigger. And I think you have real trouble getting paid because the people that need the help because they're broke.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's why you see the disparity in income between those who are with very, very big firms and have big corporate clients. But even now, in the last 5 to 10 years, a lot of corporate clients don't want to pay the big bills that the silk stocking firms are charging. They can't keep it up.
Well, they also, I mean, some of these places, I think it brought this to mind is there was a weird story, but there was a guy who used to hang around the He used to see him at the Tripoli Tap once in a while. Nice guy, and we'll go nameless. And he went to law school, and this is one of the reasons why I have this, I'm going to say, a real issue with some of the student debt stuff. Because here's a guy, bright kid, and, well, kid, he's younger than me.
He's a kid.
Yeah, he's a kid. And, so he went someplace, he comes out of there with 150 grand or 175 between undergrad and grad. And his, then, of course, he's paying that off, so he runs up some credit card bills. So the guy has been, for 25 years as a lawyer, he's been a guy who couldn't have enough money to open up his own shop. So he's working, somebody'd hire him for God knows what, 35 bucks an hour to do all this research, real bright kid. And of course they're billing him out at whatever, you know, 250 or 300. And, well, it turns out, the guy starts drinking a little bit, and all of a sudden, 2 weeks ago, the guy's dead. And I'm like, for God's sake. I mean, there's, and I, one of the places that, my attorney buddy, Mr. Greg, who comes out once in a while, right near him, there's a little bar, and it's been there forever. And a lot of people go in there that are attorneys. God, at the end of the day, they make, Frank, they make traders look like guys that are upward looking.
Yeah, there's a huge problem in the legal field for alcoholism and drug abuse. The lawyers LAP program is replete with stories of people who, because of the stress load, turn to substance abuse.
But these guys are doing the divorces of their friends because their friends don't have any dough. A lot of the guys are representing. Some of the guys in this particular place they represent a lot of policemen.
Yeah,
those guys aren't paying. I mean, is anybody? Anybody? How many people like the SIBO when I was there? I mean, I don't know what's there. I've been there a long time, but I'm saying when I was there, so it's out of the statute of limitations in terms of what I knew. They would just like get the bill from Schiff Hard and just pay it.
Yeah.
this one's 20 hours for Joe, 400 hours an hour, 20 hours for Jim, 200 hours an hour. Okay, write the check. How many places are there left like that?
Well, that was my point, that a lot of corporations who used to do that are no longer doing that. They're examining it very much, very closely compared to what they used to. They're cutting back on the amount of who can represent them. You no longer will see a bill for a first-year associate or a second-year associate who and be paid just out of hand like that. And that's putting more stress on the mid-level attorneys, and certainly it's coming from the top with the high-level attorneys and the partners.
Well, I mean, it's...
How much of this is going in-house, Brendan?
A lot of it is going in-house, too. Or you'll often... What also has happened in the last 10 to 15 years especially are mergers of big firms, which cause a lot of conflicts. You know, you've got Firm A and Firm B, both of whom have a wealth of corporate clients, who used to oppose each other in litigation, now merge. So one of those has to go. And if there's a group of lawyers who work in one discipline who are forced to leave the firm because of a conflict, they will often spin off into a smaller firm or their own firm, but they can't charge the same rates. The corporate clients are going to say, well, wait a minute, you're no longer with mega firm, you're with the smaller firm right now, you're over, it can't be that great, so we're going to reduce your payments from, you know, $1,000 an hour that you're making a mega firm, that you're billing a mega firm, to $500 an hour now.
Real quick question, then we'll let Frank dash. How many, when I was at the SIBO, again, that's the one I knew most about, no company ever let their person, when you say to bring stuff in-house, and keeping with Frank's question, did anybody let their own people litigate? But none of those guys, I mean, the SIBO would never let one of their people near a courtroom, or near, if there was an arbitration, if there was something, you always hired the outside guys. Is that still the gospel?
That's still pretty true. And it's funny because, you know, when I've worked on the government side, oftentimes I would write an opinion or something that was pretty much regurgitated by an outside firm, but they were deemed the experts, and I wasn't because I was in-house.
Ah. SP Futures down 3, Dow Futures down just 55 now, yeah. The NASDAQ Futures down 550, so we're down across the board. Frank, thank you very much, buddy. Might need you later in a week if the market goes wild
again. Okay, call.
Talk to you, buddy. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Something happening here.
Well, we're face Jackson Jackson. I'm Tim Out. Mr. Brandon Carnan, Mr. Matt Weber, and the board. SP Futures now down 6. Dow is down 60, and the NASDAQ is down 20. So we've turned down. Actually, the Dow is down 79. So we're leaking a little bit. We're down on Friday. Market doesn't look so hot, and we've got other stuff that's dragging. Again, everybody knows I've been along this gold stuff for my people, gold and silver, for a while, and it hasn't been the only good about it, Brendan, is every other place I could have put any other index I could have put money
worse.
In, it's been worse. And on the other hand, we're doing real well in the XLE because they're going up and down enough. We're making enough money scalping the put that we're actually up, even though the thing is not up. So, but I mean, it's a right now the market's a struggle, and I'm surprised. I would have for a long time. I'm thinking all it's going to take is an outlier CPI number. And we're going to goose this gold and the silver. What has changed in the last couple of years? We had a 0.6 number in the CPI last week, Brendan. And I thought for sure that would be the day the stuff would run. And yet nothing's running. I mean, there's a lot of stuff here that's very non-instinctual that's happening. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that's a fair statement.
And I don't know why, because, maybe it has to happen two or three times, you know, or something, or it has to be a little more obvious because people keep talking it down. I don't know if you were listening last week, but I was kind of ranting a little bit on this inflation stuff, and I'm kind of stunned at the level of the big lie. I'm not just talking about, you know, a president who doesn't seem to have an issue with the truth, but. It just seems like everywhere you go now, you almost have to. People tell you stuff that's bizarre, and I did some work on Tuesday. Maddie, you weren't hearing me ranting on Friday about pickup trucks. There's actually a spot in the Bureau of Labor Statistics where they tell you since 2000, the adjusted price of a new pickup is only up $600. Yet I know what I paid for my 2000 pickup, and I just priced one out at 2018 on Thursday night when I was preparing for the show. It's $45,000, and I paid $29,500 for the one in 2000. So explain to me. I mean, there's got to be, you know, a backup camera in there. There's got to be maybe. I don't even know if they have those in all the pickups now, and they've got to be the computer in there, and, you know, something's better probably. It's the exact same motor. I mean, explain to me how there's $15,000 worth of quality improvements in that truck. Where is it, Brendan? I mean, nothing. It's the same order. I mean, I'll give them four. You know, and I think that's generous. But how are they getting 15? You know, I mean, what are we? What is the purpose? We just lie because we can, or there's a purpose to it, or what are we doing?
Well, it's not a lie if you believe it.
But I guess I just, you know, you keep what, but if people don't have any idea of the facts, I mean, how do people even vote? How do people do anything? I mean, I don't know what you're. I want to ask you about your particular precinct, because on break, we were talking about the voting totals and how, you know, the House went one way and the Senate. Although it looks like I'm gonna roll with you on this. I think the Democratic lady wins in Arizona, and I think the Republican wins in Florida. Mm-hmm. Is the way I'm looking at it. Which
in both races, the governor and the Senate.
Yeah, well, I thought the governor wasn't. Was the governor up in the air in Arizona?
Oh, no, not in Arizona, but in Florida. The Florida governor and the Florida Senate.
You think they both go Republican?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, so that leaves the Republicans picking up two in the Senate, not the three or four they were crowing about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much liberal, I mean, independent proof, but not as much as four or five.
Right.
So now you're into this kind of thing, but are we... I also heard this weekend a lot of the young Democrats want to throw Nancy Pelosi out, which would be a huge step in the right direction, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I actually, on the one hand, you see the politics, and it's so crazed on the upper level, but on the lower ends, Am I just trying to be charitable here? Or I see a lot of good young people on both the Republican and Democratic side winning.
Well, I think in the elections right now, there is a lot of potential on the Democratic side for younger.
I think there is a Republican side, too.
Well, my point is going to be that you've seen the Republicans do that since really 2006, when they started winning governorships and state legislatures. You've seen the breeding ground for Republican leaders. But also look at the list of Republican candidates versus the Democratic candidates up in 2016. And potentially for 2020. When you think about people who are talked about with 2020, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren.
I don't want anybody older
potentially,
than me.
Potentially Hillary Clinton again coming back.
Oh, God.
Wait a minute. That's not a youth movement.
Let me put my coffee down. we can't go through that again. Oh, my God.
No, but I've been reading some things over the weekend in different sources that say she's maybe thinking about it again, which would be horrific. And then you look at the leadership. People like Chuck Schumer, Dick Durbin, Nancy Pelosi, Reince Stoyer. All of these guys are not the up-and-comers in the Democratic Party. And when you look at the leadership in the House and the Senate, these are the same folks who were in charge when the Democrats lost control of the House and the Senate in 2006, 2010. Why would you want to bring them back? In contrast, you know, you do see more on the Republican side, as you saw in the 2016 election. I mean, guys like, you know, even Chris Christie, Marco Rubio, I mean, these guys are 40s and 50s, and there's another whole line of them coming up beyond that from the governorship that you don't see in the Democratic ranks. At some point, the Democratic leadership, including Pelosi, is going to have to step aside and groom somebody else. You don't often see whether there's even a succession plan that they're starting to bring up people to take over for Nancy Pelosi, which I think is bad succession plan, especially when you look at the outcome of what Pelosi and Schumer have control in. Well, before that, Harry Reid, before in 2006 or 2010, 2014, when they lost dramatically under their leadership.
Well, somewhere along the line, you have to look in the mirror, Brendan, and I don't know that. I mean, the weird part is as much as Matty Weber and his gang. I'm saying mostly Matty. I think they benefit from hanging around guys like me to a certain extent. I benefit an awful lot from hanging around people like them.
I agree,
because it keeps you somewhat younger, and when you're younger, you tend to not think. I'll say you generalize a little more. You make your decision. You don't realize there's a lot of detail behind every decision, maybe as much as when you grow older. But you also can get lost in the detail.
Can also take a longer view, because if you're somebody who's 30 years old, you are. I think, and this is a generalization, but I think if you're 30, 35 years old, you're willing to give up a little bit now, if you know that 10 or 15 years later, holding this track will bring a bigger benefit. For somebody who's 78 or 80 years old, you're not willing to give up something in the next 5 years because you're going to benefit from it 15 years from now.
Well, that's true. But I think you look at these people, and they somehow have lost, they've lost their game. And to be honest, I don't think they can relate. I mean, I hate to make a softball thing. I look at myself playing softball. I'm a one-tool player now. I can't hit, I can't throw, I can't run, I can't field. I can still pitch. Yet on some teams, guys say, look, Chief, we need somebody who's steady on the mound and doesn't screw up there. We'll take care of the rest. And as long as everybody knows that, mm-hmm. you know, it's okay. But I can't, these people still think they can run and throw.
Yeah.
They can't. They obviously are not hanging around with enough young people. They think the same way they did 5 years ago. Maybe I have a huge advantage, and I think I do from being on the show. But I have to say, you know, Maddie, feel free to criticize me on the air, but I at least try and act younger and take a new thought in once in a while. I don't think they sound the same as they did 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I think if you stay with the sports analogy, it's like being an all-star on a senior league of 40 and over ball players compared to being an all-star overall.
But it's fine. The point is, in sports, as long as you love to play and you're out there playing and it makes your day, that's the whole point of it.
Exactly.
But
I agree.
But I mean, to think that you're actually good, Well, get a mirror, buddy. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you see a pop-up dropping 15 feet away from you, you used to be able to get camped under you. How do you not know that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, wow, that was my ball. Did you guys follow? Hopefully, I had better things to do this weekend. But I had workers over on Saturday, so I was hanging around in front of the computer and I was doing my research for World War One. Do you believe the saga of this tape, Maddie? Have you watched any of this?
What's his name, the CNN guy, the tape?
Oh, Acosta?
Yeah.
I watched the tape.
Yeah,
which one?
So did I. I watched both. I saw a side-by-side split screen of it.
Okay. Now, we have a Oval Office. We have a presidency that spits out a doctored tape on people.
Mm-hmm.
For God's sake. What do you think people in France, people in Britain, people, if there's somebody listening on a planet from outer space and they listen to that, they say, who are these people?
Mm-hmm.
Maddie, I know I don't have the imagination I should have. I would never even think of that if I was president.
I wouldn't either.
And then to have, what's her name? Does she need, I don't remember anything bad to happen to anybody, does she need to be sent to the convent where the girl with a nun with a ruler? It's not doctored. We just sped it up, Kellyanne Conway.
I did not hear that comment.
She was on one of the news shows, and she said it's not doctored. It's just sped up, and people in sports do that all the time.
Alternate facts.
No, they don't, Kellyanne. They slow it down in sports so you can see it better. They don't speed it up so you can see it worse. I mean, but how does somebody who I got to believe if we sat down or she was on the show, we'd probably really like her. We'd say she's bright as all get out. She's probably a very moral person. If you bet her $5 on the Bears, I'm sure she'd pay if she lost. How do you get to that where I go on national TV and say something that's stupid?
She could sell ice cubes to Eskimos.
But it's not working. I mean, at least with most people, it's not. How,
you hope it's not working, but I think that there's a segment of our society where it is working. And the more that you say it, the louder you say it, the more they're going to believe it. Despite the evidence, they won't go beyond the statements that are being made by some of the political leaders. And I think while that's a statement that is equally applicable to both sides, I think it's more prevalent with Republican statements than it is with Democratic statements.
Okay, well Maddie, you're doing a lot of stuff now, and your significant other, she's working with a lot of people. Why don't you guys explain to me the scene here? I always love to do this because I always like the detail. Explain to me the scene. You're sitting there. How many people are sitting where somebody says, well, we're accusing this guy of putting hands on this lady, and the tape doesn't exactly look like that. Right? How many people are in that room? Let's say seven. Whoever the hell they are, we don't know, but we could do a Saturday Night Live thing. There's seven people sitting around a table off the Oval Office going, the tape doesn't look like he really put hands on her to the extent that, you know, he essentially blocked her from grabbing the microphone. Okay.
And he apologized.
And he apologized. And so what do we do about this? Does one of the mopes say, well, let's speed up the tape and doctor it? And the other six people, instead of looking at him like saying, what are you, from Mars? Say, that's a good idea. I can't imagine that meeting. And yet something like that has to... I mean, I went through a couple of those when I was on the SIBO. Somebody would say something really stupid at a board meeting and it would carry the room. And you'd wonder how did that just happen? But Maddie, explain to me. How does this happen? Who is in the control spot? Who says this is a good idea and five other people agree with them and somebody actually do it? How does that even happen? You couldn't write a movie like that. How would you set up the scene in a movie if you were doing the movie?
I feel like we're in a movie right now. No, I don't understand how any of these people are in charge of me. So I'm not surprised by any decision that's made.
No, but I mean, I'm just saying. Suppose you're
what I can't believe. I mean, like Lou and folks last week on Thursday, it was like they watched a different video completely.
Yeah.
I feel like I live in an alternate universe. I don't understand anything that's going on. None of it makes sense to
me.
But
imagine you're
so no, I can't imagine sitting in a room and someone says, let's doctor the video and thinking that's a good idea for 1 second when we live in a time where there's a million videos of everything and people are going to find out instantly if you changed anything.
Don't they know that?
I don't know what these people know.
But it's a plausible argument that puts my word against your word. And when you support that, who is your audience? Who is the audience that you're trying to convince it, your side is right? And as long as you don't admit that something happened to the tape, and you keep...
Well, she did. She said they sped it up.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's often lost. What remains is the first statement that is made, the loudest statement. And I think this is true primarily from, well, I mean, you heard it with the Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
You know who you sound like when you said that? You were actually word for word from the little guy with the mustache in Germany. He said, if it's a big lie, even if it's repudiated later, the strains of it or the entrails remain forever.
Oh, yeah. I believe that. I believe that's a big strategy of the leadership in Washington right now, that things are just thrown out there with no evidence, with no support. It's the wildest things. And here's an analogy that I'll use. And I've seen this in action, and this is one of the reasons why I never wanted to do litigation. But I used to know a really good friend who was a state's attorney out in Arizona, and she used to prosecute drug deals. And when she would prosecute drug deals, the defense lawyers would come up with the most outrageous set of facts to justify their client's behavior. And at the end, they'll ask the witness, isn't this possible that it could happen? Well, you know, there may be a higher probability of getting struck by lightning three times in one day than this happening, but, you know,
or hitting
have
the upright on four kicks in
or
one
hit
day.
The up, exactly.
Or hitting a drive and landing on a possible? Bird, and the bird flying it over the green and dropping it in the hole, yeah.
Is it possible? Is it within the realm of possibility? Is it statistically possible that this would happen? And of course the answer is yes. I mean, it may be one in a billion, but it's statistically possible it would happen. How likely is it? But, you know, that's what we hear a lot from people like Trump. And it's infuriating that that's what carries the day.
I think it's amazing, too, how people can watch the same thing and have completely different perspectives. And
I agree.
You see it all the time in replay in sports, depending on, you know, if it's going for your team or against your team. You know, oh, he dropped that. No, that's a catch. And you're watching the same exact video. When we were doing the show on Thursday, I hadn't seen the video and I hadn't even heard of it yet because I was busy last week, as Chief would say, professionally drinking with customers.
Yeah. By the way, how much bigger is your liver in this Monday as it was last Monday?
Let's just say this week we're going to take it easy compared to last week. But Lou and Chief were talking about the video. And, you know, I don't give a rat's ass about Jim Acosta. I don't care about him one way or the other. So I assumed, based on their conversation, that he did some egregious thing. And didn't think much of it, and you know, I was had no reason to think otherwise. And then I actually watched the video, and I'm thinking, he didn't do anything. What the hell?
He turned his shoulders. I'm like, he turned his shoulders, and his left arm came down to block the intern from grabbing the mic out of his hand.
And more importantly, he said, you know, excuse me.
He said, pardon me.
Yeah, pardon, ma'am, pardon me, I'm going to ask the question. And it was very professional, mm-hmm. I thought. I was like... And I don't, like I said, I don't care about Jim Acosta at all. I never even heard of Jim Acosta.
We care about our guy, Pedro Acosta. Yeah. We care about what happens to him.
I don't watch CNN, and even if I did, I don't give a rat's ass about the reporters. Like, mm-hmm. why would I care? So I had no reason to think otherwise. But then it, like, took me back to the Thursday morning conversation, and, you know, Lou was so adamant that it was such a bad thing. I'm gonna ask him about that next time he comes on, but I was like, am I watching the wrong video here?
I know. I had the same impression because I had heard about the story before I saw the video. And I tried to go into it with an open mind, and I did not see what was attributed to them by the White House.
All right, so you guys have very...
The other interesting was that in the original version that was played, the original version, you could hear Acosta say, pardon me, ma'am. That was not in the other
video.
Well,
she admitted they doctored the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So they sped it up and doctored the sound.
Because it would be much more noticeable if the sound was sped up as well. So the words would have been blurred or dropped because of the speed up.
All right, so you guys have, in both of your ways now, you're getting very good at this, you've dodged the question. You two are making a movie.
Well, that's because the question you really meant to ask was...
did Trump okay it? I'm saying how... The decision process, do you put five people in a room? Do you take somebody who took it upon himself to speed it up first and said, you like this better? I wouldn't even know how to set it up, to be honest with you. That's why I'm asking you guys. Could this be a meeting of seven people that was an official meeting? I doubt it. Is it two people say, let's see how it looks, we'll doctor it and see how it looks? I can't even imagine how that decision made it out of the room. Can you?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't know how high up the chain. Did it go to someone like Kellyanne Conway? Did it go to Sarah Sanders? Did it go to Trump?
Whose idea was it?
Well, the guy who released it is a guy who also denied the Sandy Hook happened. He was a guy who has been affiliated with websites that are ultra-conservative and are deniers of things like Sandy Hook and other things from history.
Is the world still flat?
Can you imagine denying that Sandy Hook happened or denying the Holocaust and looking people in the eye who actually lost their children?
There's a guy on the Southwest side who got 56,000 votes last week as a Holocaust denier.
It's really something. By the way, Kevin writes in on Twitter, I agree with the Stocks and Jocks group about the video. However, there's another part of the story, Acosta seeing his role as arguing with the president in a press conference. Mm-hmm. He's supposed to ask questions, get answers, and follow up to clarify if necessary.
I would agree with that.
Fair question. Fair statement.
Right, the question,
like I said, I don't even know who Jim Acosta is. So this guy...
He's been a CNN guy for a while, and he asks the questions that nobody wants. Mm-hmm.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, he presses the point. He won't take diverted answers. He'll come back with something else. He's a pain in the butt to the people in power.
Did he do that consistently to all the people he asked questions to, or just to Trump?
I think it was before this. I think it was before, but it didn't get the notoriety that it has in Trump because Trump is thin-skinned.
I think it's general that people, but you know, Maddie, keep your finger on a button. the weird part of it
we're online. You can cuss.
When people talk about let's say the right, we're not going to even call these people the right. But when you have a crazy sounding demonstration out in the middle of traffic like last Friday night, and they're playing it on, and these and people don't even know what the hell they're protesting. They're just screaming and yelling in the middle of the street and stopping traffic. I think normally public shows like that, and obviously the Million Man March with Martin Luther King, those kinds of things, I think those are very positive in a lot of ways, but they also need to be very selective.
Mm-hmm.
And what you don't want is the people that are the Trumpettes and Trumpers. You don't want to be making those videos for them, because you're playing right into their hands right now. Because that's what that group thinks that is wrong with this country. That you've got a bunch of people running around demanding more money out of other people and stopping traffic. And basically breaking the law and doing stuff. You don't, that's not the look you want to do right now. I don't think. Or am I wrong, Brent? I mean, we're not talking about a demonstration that's done in, we're going back to this 60s stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it works now. I think all you do is play in the other people's hands and say.
I think in the 60s they said the same thing.
So,
I'm not saying, I understand what you're saying. There's no doubt that the Trump people, it plays right into their hands. And they're going to use that and they're going to rally up their rabid base. And I get that. But every time there's, in our, history, every time there's people rallying against something, there's always the people that say, this is not the time or place to be rallying.
It's always gone.
You can find the civil rights stuff. Those people were saying, this is not the time and place.
The Vietnam War protests.
Right, exactly.
And it takes time for it to play out whether they were right or wrong. And you're still going to get arguments on both sides that it was the right time or the wrong time. It's never going to be the perfect time.
The players, the Kaepernick stuff, I truly believe Kaepernick will be looked back fondly 30 years from now, just like Muhammad Ali is. But at the time, people thought, he was a disgrace.
Well, if you're
and now he's looked back fondly.
In the Vietnam time, the time was before you got drafted, right? I mean, it didn't do you any good if you already had your gun in the jungle.
So. Well, that's right. And the draft was an important driver of all those protests because you were drafted at the time. It wasn't a volunteer army.
I mean, I guess the reason why I said that is I'm not – you guys know that I don't necessarily feel that way, but – remember, Maddie, when they were doing the Wall Street crap?
Oh, yeah.
I actually took it upon
Occupy
myself.
Occupy Wall Street.
I went over there when all those guys were in front of the Board of Trade. And I said, tell you what, I'll put you guys on the show. Who's your leader? Oh, well, we don't have a leader. We don't have a leader. Well, what the hell are you doing? What are the five things you want? Well, we can't tell you. People are here for different reasons. I said, no, people just think all you're doing is wrecking the street if you don't have a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you need a leader. You need to be able to come up to a show and say, here's the three things we want. Doesn't that make sense? And the answer should be yes.
Yes.
You can't just say we're just going to stop the street forever. I mean, what does that do for anybody? Mm-hmm. SP futures now down 8.25, down 82. Nasdaq down 43. Been leaking. We came in. We were up actually a little bit. Been leaking through our whole show. Be right back, David Adelman.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom, Mr. Brennan Cornett, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 8, Dow down 79, NASDAQ down 43, which is appreciably worse than when we came in. So we've been leaking. We're down heavy Friday, so market, we had a huge up day last week, and then we've been leaking since. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down a bunch now. 164, 1.4%. It was only down 1% an hour ago. FTSE down 30.3%, 4%. Those are down lower as well. Same with the CAC around. It was almost unchanged before. Now it's down 30.6. So leaking worldwide. Nikkei up 19 points, 0.1%. Shanghai up 31. That's a move over there to the upside. 1.2%. Hang Seng up 31.1. Oil, we've got up 61 cents. That's a whole 1%. Biggest move in oil up the upside for a while. Brent up 98 cents. That's a 1.4%. Natural gas, again, this is the number. $3.88, up a dollar, probably 15 from a couple of months ago.
some combination of not enough in storage, early cold spell, and the fact is it's cold. so it's not like it's a prediction. Natural gas up 16 cents, RBOB gas down 2 cents. I gotta get a, you know what, we're gonna get a heating oil quote from David because I'm sure he's got it. Because there's gotta be a huge move in the crack spread. Silver down 5 cents, gold down 270, and it was up when we came in. Eddie, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of crashes to report, even though we had been relatively light on traffic due to it being Veterans Day. Inbound Stevenson, just before Western Avenue, we have a crash. That's just been cleared, but all kinds of congestion now on the Stevenson because of that earlier crash. I-355 in the Lakeshore Drive is now an hour and 10 minutes from the Tri-State. We're at about an hour, so stop-and-go traffic on the Stevenson due to that earlier inbound crash. No issues on the Eisenhower, but high traffic volumes building. Kennedy looks okay. On the Edens, we have a crash on the outbound side just before Skokie Road. That's been moved to the right shoulder. Montrose to Lake Cook's about 44 minutes now due to that crash. No issues on the south side as far as the expressways are concerned. Off the expressways, we have a crash at Lake Cook Road eastbound at Wilmot Road. I don't know that one. And we also in the Northern Burbs malfunctioning signals Route 83 at Washington Street. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, overcast skies with a high of 36, wind chills in the low 20s. Right now it's mostly cloudy and 32 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 67 today. Right now it's clear and 49. In sports, Bears remain in first place. They jumped out to a 26-0 lead over the Lions, held on to beat Detroit 34-22. Mitch Trubisky accounted for 4 touchdowns, 3 passing, 1 rushing in the win. Cardinals lost to the Chiefs 26-14. Sunday Night Football, it was the Cowboys over the Eagles 27-20. And in hockey, the Coyotes beat the Capitals 4-1. Blackhawks, Bulls were off. Chief.
Thank God the Blackhawks and Bulls were off. They're horrible.
Boy, what happened to the Blackhawks? is it just that they got old, or what is going on? I mean, I know that the salary cap, the hard salary cap, has caused them to get rid of a lot of good players, but boy, they are just playing horrendous.
They got a few guys that are old. They've got a few horrible trades. They got some guys they thought would help that don't.
Well, Saad has not proved himself.
That was a terrible trade.
I think it was two terrible trades. Getting rid of him, and I don't know if it was just because of salary cap, but when they traded for him to come back, well, same thing with Sharp. When they traded for Sharp to come back, that didn't pan out either.
Well,
it was like they lost. Well, true, but I mean they both lost the magic that they had when they left. So did Bowman trade them away a year too early, like you want to do?
Saad's only, he's not even 30 yet.
No, he's yeah. in his like 25, 26. Yeah. He's very young, but. I mean, my point is that, you know, you all, as a general manager, you'd rather trade a guy a year too early than keep him a year or two too late.
The sad thing is, I don't know, that's a mystery, Matty. I don't know what the story is with that. The guy should be in his prime right now.
He should be. I agree.
And
I was at the game Thursday night, and before we even sat down, they were down 4-0. And, I mean, it was that fast. But then they actually rallied back and scored 3 goals and then had chances of pulling the goalie late to tie that game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually a pretty exciting third period. And I thought, okay, maybe this is the turnaround game with the new coach where, you know, they were shell-shocked and then they stormed back and almost won the game, and or at least almost tied it. And maybe this will carry some momentum forward. And then they just got smoked on Saturday.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows?
Well, they had Henny Stroza, the guy they missed. They missed Panarin. David, how are you?
I'm doing just fine.
The real quick, I have one question. I don't know why I dig this stuff up. This is all on Yahoo. But these guys, you know, they are a little bit of a... The people they've unhinged their tongue since we have different people in Washington. This lady, a Republican U.S. Senator in Mississippi, praising someone by saying, if he invited me to a public hanging, I'd be in the front row.
Yeah.
How could you... Why would anybody even think of something like that?
Who knows?
That's probably like a figure of speech down there. No, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, the South has a long history of lynchings that were very popular.
Mississippi has a history of racially motivated lynchings of black people. The NAACP website says between 1882 and 1968, there were, guess how many lynchings in the United States?
How many lynchings in the United States? 5,000.
12,000.
Brennan, you know, sometimes you surprise me, but 47, 43. And nearly 73% of the victims were black. Mississippi at 581, the highest number of any state. All I remember about, well, not all I remember, one of the things I remember from my William Kennedy book was, if you see people hacking around, when I say hacking around, isn't somebody trying to get an anti-lynching law finally passed by Congress?
I think I've read something like
I
that.
I think I've read recently. Something about, yeah, recently.
Because they tried to run one of those through in Roosevelt's time. And at that time, it was the longest filibuster in Senate record to stop a... The story on this was when Roosevelt's group, when I say Roosevelt's group, when the part of the New Deal was, is they were gonna pay some farmers not to farm because the agricultural stuff, they'd done some weird stuff overseas, it was just too much, and they were gonna pay people not to farm. And one of the people, a lot of the stuff in the South was sharecropping.
Mm-hmm.
Which was about as bad a life. I think it might have been better than the coal mines, but maybe by a hair. You know, that was like the two worst groups you could possibly be. So essentially, if you owned the property, you allowed people to farm it for you got what, a piece of their stuff.
You got a lot of their stuff.
You got a lot of their stuff, and so those guys didn't do so hot. Well, of course, the federal government sends the check to the owner with under the direction that he's supposed to share it with the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
Now. I'm going to say that didn't work out so well, David. Is that a fair statement?
Yep.
And so a lot of people from the North, a lot of them white, a lot of the other people here, when you say 73% of the victims were black, the other 27% were people from the North, I think, that went down and tried to help the blacks. And they went down and said this is an outrage. So there was all these lynchings going on basically during the 30s, not caused by the New Deal. It was caused by people not paying attention to what the details were. And they tried to get a federal anti-lynching law, and it never passed. They could not get one through.
One of the interesting things about that, too, is that the filibuster by the Southern congressmen were mostly Democratic congressmen. At that time, the South was solidly Democratic. It wasn't until the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act of the 60s that the South turned Republican.
Yeah, who was that? Huey Long was behind that, or was it Bogg? Who was the guy who flipped it? Lou knows. Lou went through this whole history for us once. Who the guy was that he flipped Republican and all the rest of them flipped Republican. Because guys like Lyndon Johnson were Democrats.
Yeah.
But Lyndon was not exactly liberal.
No, he wasn't. And when he signed the Civil Rights Act, he knew it was a gamble. And he even made the comment.
Well, he was a traitor to his Klan with that.
He made the comment that as I'm signing this legislation, I've just turned over the South to the Republican Party.
Yep.
And within 10 years, that was true.
Yeah, that's. All right, David. What's going on, bud? What's going on with the market? Hey, questions from earlier. How big is this natural gas contract? And what's going on with heating oil? Between heating oil's got to be going up and gas going down. That's a crazy move in that spread, huh?
Well, but it's typical.
I don't think I've ever seen gas go up.
Usually the driving season, quote-unquote, ends, Labor Day or shortly thereafter. And the storage, actually, for heating oil, I think, begins... I don't know, August, into September, October, and then you start using it for the colder weather.
All right, I'm going to say that in the last 60 days, natural gas is up 30% and gasoline is down 20%. I'm going to say that if we go back, which you could do, I couldn't, so I'd have to trust you on this one. David, you can trust, even if like there was a drink riding on it. I'm going to say that we've never seen a move percentage-wise bigger than this.
That may be true. And I'll tell you, just in deference to you and the show, since I know nothing about natural gas, other than, we're exporting some, the only story that I found was that one weather story that I talked about last Monday, and there was another story between that an agreement for exploration for liquid natural gas between UAE and Saudi Arabia. Otherwise, I'm telling you, Dow Jones and Reuters and whatever, there are no stories. So I'm sure there's something, but what it is, I do not know.
Shani's buddy was saying that the build wasn't as big as last year for some reason. I don't know where you get...
Yeah, but I mean, look where it's come. It's doubled.
Well, I mean, we've got... I'm going to say 3 years ago, I played golf on Thanksgiving Day. That ain't happening this year.
No.
And we played softball every Sunday up to Thanksgiving last year. We haven't played in 6 weeks. And we weren't going to play yesterday. What was it, 30 degrees?
It's cold. I mean, yeah. Tomorrow's high here. Chicago is supposed to be like 29.
Yeah, it's a. I mean, it's an early bulge out of the gas stuff. But I don't have heating oil on my stuff, and I always give you these things on the air. What, is heating oil made a spike too? It has to have. It's the same.
Not like natural gas at all. You're at front month is December. You're at 217.67 to be exact, and in fact, until on the beginning of October, October 3rd, you were at high at 245.41, and you are last at 217.74. So you've gone down 10%.
Well, for those that maybe don't know, isn't heating oil essentially the same thing as number two diesel? I believe it is. I mean, taking the attitudes.
I don't know the answer to that. That would surprise me.
I'm gonna say it's.
I don't think you use diesel to heat homes.
I think you do.
Well, okay.
I'll make you.
Well, you know better than
I do. I'll make you a $1 bet.
No,
Randolph.
No, I won't bet. I don't know enough about it.
That's because you got like all you got is 20s and 100s. You don't have a dollar. You can't even pay me.
Yeah.
You're like Thomas, but for a different reason. He doesn't carry any cash. He's only, he's just got his debit card. So unless I become a bank, I can't win my buck. But so what do you make of this, David? We had Friday. We're down pretty heavy, but you know it didn't fly into the close bad or anything. Last night we're up a little bit. I thought we'd get a little bit of a bounce this morning. I know we've been leaking ever since we got here. What do you?
You have, and I don't like to anticipate. You know, technical formations, but you have the makings of one of the very, very best head and shoulders bottoms that I've seen. And that has absolutely just discerning and from, you know, my experience, not an opinion on the market, but the market went into, I'm using front month E-mini S&P. You went into what would be the left shoulder on October 11th, hitting a low at 27.12 and a quarter. Then you went up through the 17th to 28.24 and a quarter, down into the head to 26.03 on the 29th. Then what would be the right shoulder, November 7th, 28.17.75, short of that 28.24, and now down. If you go down anywhere to 27.50 to as low as 27.12, as long as you don't violate 27.12 on the December future and then start railing, you have an absolutely symmetrical, as close to perfect as I've seen, head and shoulders bottom. And then if you come out over 28.24, you'd look to 30.50.
Wow.
So I'm not saying, hey, you can go back down to the lows and violate that formation, and that would not shock me either. So I'm not trying to express an opinion, but this leg down is absolutely critical for the longs to hold and for the bears, for the shorts to break.
I have a question for you, and that's sort of that regard. And again, you know, history doesn't. You want to know what history is about, but you don't want to be glued to it either because it never exactly repeats itself. When in the early 80s, when the technical guy in those days, because David was too young, was Joe Granville, right? And there were a couple other guys, but he was one of the guys. And
yeah, he drove that Rolls Royce up to his fence,
yeah,
in front of his mansion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, he had the Rolls. You got to hit. You know, you need one of those just so.
Yeah, right.
So. When the market was way down, okay, well, you know, we're talking about 800, and interest rates were, you know, pull a number, 15%, they started going down, and the market started going up. And Joe was all over the place about how, you know, this formation, that formation, how you needed to test this, needed to test that. I'm going to say, David, that he was absolutely correct, except two things were happening at the same time. One was the normal market patterns, but because the interest rate, say it dropped from 15 to 10 quickly. He needed to take his whole chart, it seemed to me, and move it up 15% and then have it. You know what I'm saying? Because there were two things going on. There was the normal market crap, for lack of a better term, but there was a revaluation. And I think right now, if we continue to move these interest rates up, and that CPI number Thursday certainly leads me to believe that we're going to, you can probably take I'm asking you the question. Can you just take your charts and just take the bottom line and drop it 10% and then use the charts? You know what I'm saying? I mean, if there's a revaluation thing going on, there could be two things going on at once. I mean, I saw it to one side, but it was so obvious. This time it's not quite as obvious, but I'm thinking sort of the same thing's happening.
Maybe. Let's put it this way. You're going to have a battle between earnings, which, you know, everyone was looking for 19% in Q3, and they look like they're coming in north of 25, maybe as high as 27. And the next quarter, you know, they're looking for substantially lower. Some say 10%, some say 7%. But still on a bigger base, that's pretty impressive. And the rate hikes. You know, you have to value the competition, and the competition is yield. And, you know, we've already raised a couple times. I'm sure the Fed, or not sure, but 80% chance that the Fed will go in December, and probably 2 to 3 times next year. So you have to revalue what those earnings are worth. Well, and what that does to the chart, as far as the revaluation, you know, is definitely in the cards.
When, Brandon, I'd love your opinion on this, because it's more of a behavioral social opinion than just markets. What if, David, perhaps, and it's not just I'm the one who thought about it, although, you know, this is what I talk about all the time, so I can't say as I'm immune to myself here. The earnings are up, and I think they're going to stay that way for a little bit. But what if they're not up because things are necessarily that much stronger? Companies just spotted themselves to have a little bit of pricing power. I mean, the General Motors earnings, if you look at those earnings, to me, A, you're glad you're long GM. And the second thing is, I almost want to sell it like 6 months from now, because what it says is, we've got a CPI number that says that pickup trucks are the same price, and then you've got a lady comes on who's the president of the damn place saying we raise the price so much for making $605 more a truck. Well, obviously I'm going to believe her more than I'm going to do the... At some point, where does that clash? I mean, we're probably swinging back time-wise to 1973.
Well, let me ask you a slightly different question. Would you feel the same way about Ford, given where Ford is right now and where they're struggling?
Well, but I'm saying the combination of they're struggling. You're right. They're struggling, but I think that their numbers came out. How much more money did they make on pickup trucks?
Mm-hmm. No, I've seen that too. That for pickup trucks, there's a much bigger return for them.
I think Ford got caught with a different Chevy, for instance, has an awful lot more crossovers and everything of every mm-hmm. single size. I mean, that one commercial is actually pretty powerful. There's a crossover for every size.
Yeah.
A two-person family, a four-person family, and a six-person. I don't think Ford has that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they're as set up as GM. Now, again, I'm not an auto expert or anything, because I'm more of a truck guy, but what I'm saying is if all of a sudden Home Depot comes out and says, God, we had the best year ever. We raised prices 20%, and we only lost 8% of the, quote, business. Well, it's fine if everybody's getting a raise.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I'm saying, David, where's the clash? Where in 74, when people started raising prices, when did they get to the point where they raised them so much they got no business? I mean, I think you get away with it for a while. I don't know how long you get away with it, and I don't know how to predict when the crossover is. I wish I did.
No pun intended with crossover.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. It's very interesting. I do think that GM has a totally different setup, you know, than Ford. I mean, Ford's, you know, indicated that, you know, in 3, 4, 5 years, they may not make cars anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you just look at where's the most troubled area. Well, supposedly it's China, because their economy is, you know, whatever, deleveraging or, you know, deflating or... currency issues, trade and tariff issues are obvious, or whatever. GM's killing it with Cadillacs and, to a lesser extent, Buicks. Ford's nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's right, and I don't exactly know why. But if you were to ask me the brand of a, if I was gonna get a Buick, which people that I know, me actually, the Chevys are. If I was going to get a Buick, other than a nice Buick, if you would ask me the three cars that are equivalent to it, I'd probably say, what's the little crossover the Toyota has, the little one the Nissan has? They're all real nice, Honda. But I don't even know what the Ford one is. I guess it's the Escape? Must be.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not, for some reason, you don't see people competing, and they don't seem as competitive in there, and I don't know why.
They're not.
I mean,
I don't know either.
Because, I mean, it seems like people want...
And it's not just there. I mean, it's Singapore, Malaysia, all those places. I mean, GM is, you know, I mean, they do plenty of, you know, Nissans and Hondas and Toyotas and whatever, certainly because of the geographic proximity. But they're, you know, Cadillac and Buick are huge there. Ford, nowhere to be seen.
Well, I mean, I think most people I know that have any of those cars are pretty happy with them. I don't know if anybody that I've known that bought a car, and even one group. Well, Steph that came on comes on Tuesday. Her husband just bought a Ford. What's the bigger Ford? Not the you know, the big SUV. The one that's is it the S? Not the, I don't know, one of their crossovers, and they love it. He says it's really nice. So I mean,
is that the Flex?
I'm not sure, but it's I don't think you can buy it.
There's the Flex. There's the Edge. There's the Escape. There's the EcoSport.
I think it might have been the Escape.
There's the Explorer.
Might be the Escape. But they, we had the guy in from General Motors a few years ago, right? Then he said the last decade was the decade of the consumer. You can't buy a crummy car. Isn't that what he said? No matter who you buy it from.
Better not be if their average car is like 32 grand.
Well, they used to be able to pay a lot for them and they were no good.
They weren't 32.
No, they weren't 32, but they lasted, let's just say the salt and the old metal didn't work together too much.
That's for sure. Now, yeah, if you want to, you can easily get over 200,000 miles, blink of an eye, like no issue at all.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was first starting to drive, 100,000 miles was considered a lot. Now that's like nothing.
Back in my day.
Well, it's
right. I know that wasn't that long, 25 years ago.
I'll lob one at you. It had more to do with age than miles. The thing would fall apart rust wise in Chicago after, I mean, was it, we do say.
But I think Eddie's point is that would have been true in Arizona as well.
Yeah.
I remember when you used to, before you'd get a car, one of the big deals was undercoating the hood.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Because if you didn't undercoat and whatever that cost, or if you could get them to throw it in, that thing would rust like there'd be no tomorrow. There's no such thing anymore.
Well, one of the drivers, I think, is the fact that if you go back 20 or 30 years and you got a car loan, you knew that you would have a little bit of time when you had no car payments before you needed a new car. Now, when you're talking about a 7 or 8 year car loan payment, that's a long time.
That's insane.
Well, it sure is. And remember, we had the question from one of the listeners, and I'm not. There's no such thing as a dumb question, but somebody wrote in and they said, I don't know who was there with me that day, but whoever, Chief and whoever was here. Why is there a manufacturer suggested retail price and you always get the car for less or the truck for less? You would think that this is standard knowledge from people. It's so they have another 4 or 5 or 10 or however many grand it is to deal with your used car that's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have thought everybody knew that, but maybe not.
And because it's just a fake price.
Yeah. Well, but it's
just like when you when you work in retail and you mark something with the full price and then immediately mark it with the sale price. The full price never existed.
Yeah.
Well, but if you walk in and all you did was talk to the guy about, say, your current car, Maddie. If you walk in and say how much you take care of it and it's in great shape and blah blah blah, they'll say I'll give you $25,000 for your used car, knowing full well it's worth 20, and then you'll just pay list for the other car, but you feel better.
It was amazing, and you know, when Val and I traded in our cars about a year ago, the difference in what the dealers, various dealers, were willing to give us on the trade-ins was very, very unusual.
Well, some are going to put on the lot, some are going to wholesale it.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this I don't want to say anything bad about our fair sex, but when I worked at Allied Van Lines, I just started working. Keep this as brief as possible. One of the young ladies gets a raise, and she goes out and buys another car. And I said, well, that's really neat. I mean, it looked nice, whatever. And I go, how much you pay for it? Well, I don't know. How much you get for your old one? I don't know. And I said, well, how exactly did this transaction go down? Well, I was paying $125 in a month on the old one. I walked in, I looked at this, and the guy said, how much can you afford now? I got a raise. I can pay $150. He goes, if I can get you in that car for $150 a month, will you do it? And the answer was yes.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, and if I get another raise in 2 years, I'm going to do it all over again. what do I care what the price was? You know,
right.
And you know what? At a certain level, she's right and I'm wrong. If I fit in her, you know, I better just shut up. She's happy. Just let it go. You know, mm-hmm. Where I would, of course, would be, how much am I paying for a new one? How much are you giving me for the old one? Will I sell it myself? You know, she might have no part of any of that stuff. You know, S&P futures down 6, Dow futures down 60, and NASDAQ futures down 36. Thank you, guys. Maddie, good job. Oil up 83 cents now. Just had a big bounce up. We'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.